Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of Nature Now at kptz.org.
Hello, this is Deborah Kelso, host of this edition of Nature Now for the second week of July. Although we are recording this on the 12th of June, so some of our observations might seem a bit out of sync. I have long wished to do a show focusing on the best way to get rid of noxious weeds, so I was so very pleased when Sophie DeGroot from the Noxious Weed Board agreed to do a program with us. Welcome, Sophie.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. Sophie is the Noxious Weed Coordinator for Jefferson County, and is very busy at this time of year, both educating us all on what to look out for and wrenching up the worst of the weeds herself with her crew. As an aside, I have to say that we are sorry not to see both you and your crew in action today. Due to scheduling constraints, we had to record this show without the crew. Sophie is normally joined by a crew of two seasonal field assistants. We'd like to give a big shout out and thanks for all their hard work to Kara Mayer and Rachel Smith. And some of you listeners may know Rachel as KPTZ's new volunteer and outreach manager. And also joining us is my friend and field recorder Meg Amos, who has a few noxious weed questions of her own. Welcome, Meg.
Thank you.
I'm in a bit of a quandary in that I had planned to do the mystery sound. I was so very excited that I had, for the first time ever, a pair of sapsuckers. Well, this is the first time I've ever seen sapsuckers on my property, and I had a nest of sapsuckers, and we were hoping to record the fledglings because they were so loud. But just a couple of hours ago, I saw the adults flying around and making agitated sounds, and so I think that something came and got that young one. So I'm still going to insert sapsucker young in honor of them as the mystery sound. But for those of you that don't know sapsuckers, we have red-breasted sapsuckers here, and they are very beautiful. They're medium-sized woodpecker, and they're the ones that drill those regular-sized holes in trees, and they go and they scoop up the sap and the insects there. That's what they feed on. They are lovely birds. Nature is a cruel place sometimes. Mm-hmm. Everyone's got to eat, and apparently someone scooped up that youngster right as it was ready to leave the nest. But I had a pair of downy woodpeckers nest this year also, and they were within 20 feet of each other, and those birds, I think, fledged on the 8th of June. I think they were successful, so we're just counting our blessings.
That's right.
So, back to weeds. We have a lot of ground to cover. I have to confess that I have a selfish reason for wanting to do this program on weed eradication, because I have been both so surprised and alarmed to see some noxious weed incursion on my own property and neighborhood. And I'm very eager to learn the best way to get rid of them. And I am vigilant. I mean, I've got almost 7 acres of woods, so it's hard to notice everything, but I know my native plants, and so I look, and all of a sudden, like, I'll turn around and there'll be a holly that's almost waist high. And I don't know how they do it, but noxious weeds aren't called noxious for nothing. They are something. So I reckoned that it would be the perfect time for this show because most invasive plants are now clearly identifiable by leaf and flower, and most have not yet started to seed, so it'd be a good time to grab them. So, Sophie, we should probably start at the very beginning and ask you to define what a noxious weed is for us.
Great question. a noxious weed is actually a legal term. A lot of people think it might mean like toxic or poisonous.
Or obnoxious.
Exactly, obnoxious. We're all very familiar with plenty of obnoxious weeds. And ultimately, a weed is somewhere you don't want it to be. So a weed is a very subjective term. But noxious weed is a legal definition at the state level. In Washington's revised code, chapter 1710, you can read all about the noxious weed laws, and they outline a list of weeds that are particularly invasive. They're non-native, invasive, and harmful to either humans or animals or ecosystems or recreational opportunities or timber or whatever it may be. And so noxious weeds are just like, I think there's over 100 on the list. And Jefferson County, we've got, as far as I know, about 40 of those to some varying degree. And noxious weeds, they can really be detrimental to human health or animal health. Poison hemlock, one I think many people in Jefferson County are familiar with, can kill animals just by eating like 1% of their body weight.
Poison hemlock is scary. I mean, I was reading that poison hemlock can stay toxic for 2 years, any part of the plant, right?
Mm-hmm. So you have to be really careful with what you use to pull it up.
Excuse me, but I don't know if the recorder will pick up. Those are the adult sapsuckers that are making, they make that really weird kind of whiny sound. We're within about 40 feet of the nest, so I think they're back trying to find the young. And maybe we'll be lucky. Maybe
it tried to fly away on its own.
Maybe it did, and maybe we'll find it yet.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry to interrupt you.
That's okay. It's all tied together. Yeah, I mean, noxious weeds, they just can be destructive in many ways, whether it's like roots growing through home foundations or up through sidewalks to harming animals or, you know, reducing fishing opportunities because they're so thick in a water body. I think that covers the definition.
Yeah. And what is the Noxious Weed Board? Does each county in Washington have one? And when was it established?
So every county can have a Noxious Weed Board. I believe that 38 of our 39 counties have an active weed board, and we are trying to activate that last county right now. But Jefferson County's weed board, I think, was activated in the early 2000s, like late 90s or early 2000s, and then it was run by volunteers for a long time. And so the coordinator, I believe, was first hired part-time in like 2010, and then it became a full-time position in 2014 or 2015. And now we have a special assessment, so every property owner in Jefferson County pays a small amount that goes towards the Noxious Weed Control Board.
Good.
$5.50 an acre, and $5.50 per parcel plus 45 cents per acre, I believe.
Well, the
vast majority of people are paying like $5 to $7. And that funds the Noxious Weed Board. So the Noxious Weed Board is a regulatory board at the county. And so we have five members that sit on the board that represent the five weed districts. They're their own districts. They don't line up with any other districts in the county. And right now we have four of those five seats filled, and they hired me, they hired the coordinator, they determine the weed list every year. All our meetings are open to the public. I think the January meeting is kind of the most exciting because we're going over what the state has added or moved around, changed classes, which we'll talk about. And then the public can propose new weeds.
Uh-huh.
And the weed list is set at the state level, but the county does have some ability to shift those a bit, which we can talk about when we talk about the different classes.
Uh-huh. So what is the primary role of the weed board?
So the weed board has three arms. The first one is outreach and education, so coming to people's homes and doing site visits and helping them determine what weeds they have and how to deal with them. you might find us tabling at the farmers market or fair or, you know, various events around the county. Our door is also always open at the WSU Extension office if you have questions or you want to bring plant samples. And then the second is control. So the Noxious Weed Control Board staff, which is myself and the two seasonals, we have contracts with most of the public agencies around here. So the city of Port Townsend, state parks, county roads, PUD, the Forest Service is a new contract that we have. Mm-hmm. And that allows us to do weed work on all of those properties. So you might see our crew in a roadside ditch or at the state park controlling weeds. And then the third arm is enforcement. So, you know, if I am driving around and I see a weed on your property, I'm going to verify that it is that weed. And then you might get a letter from us just informing you that it is required for control. You know, we gently tell you why it is required for control. And we offer a list of businesses that can help. And we're working on a cost share program to help people fund that. And you know, we're always happy to help people as best we can to determine how to get rid of control. Control can be very laborious and expensive, mm-hmm. but ultimately weeds, you know, they travel in ways that are very difficult for us to comprehend, I think. I mean, something as small as a seed on your tire could then end up in a state park forest
yeah.
because it ended up in a parking lot and someone picked it up on their shoe. And I think that's very hard to comprehend. But the easier example is perhaps some ivy on someone's property crawling into the neighbor's property
yep.
and now it's two people's problem. So
yeah,
that the enforcement aspect is kind of the third arm of the weed board.
Uh-huh. Obviously the best thing would be for a neighborhood to talk to each other and mm-hmm. to have that we're all vigilant and all watching and all subsidizing removal of invasive plants.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you have a great website. I was doing some reading before our meeting and found a very interesting fact that Washington's first weed law was passed in 1881 to fight the spread of Canadian thistle. Mm-hmm. And it was a weed accidentally brought in by early settlers. And it's still one of your biggest issues, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is not required for control in Jefferson County.
Because it's so widespread.
It is essentially
right.
naturalized. I mean, I think everyone is familiar with those purple flowers and the tufts that, you know, are just lining the side of the road. Maybe a little early this year, but come July. And yeah, so we do control it when we see it, but we don't normally like set out to control Canadian thistle.
The same like Scotch broom, right? It's kind of like
mm-hmm.
that horse has left the barn mm-hmm. and we would really like to get rid of it. But mm-hmm. when you see a whole hillside covered in Scotch broom, you just kind of shrug and
yep.
shake your head.
I know people are often just baffled that I can just drive by all the Scotch broom, but I have to.
You have to. Yeah, you have to choose your battles, mm-hmm. like with so many things.
Yeah.
And so there are three categories of noxious weeds, right? They're classes.
Mm-hmm.
And your website has really great descriptions, has photos, and puts them into those categories. So what are those generally?
Yeah, so there are three classes of weeds, class A, B, and C. And class A are like newcomers to Washington. They're rare. They might only be known in one spot in the whole county, or I'm sorry, the whole state. But the state weed board looked at all the evidence of that plant, you know, across the country and said this has a high probability of becoming very invasive. So they've required it for control at that high level. And the goal with those is to completely eradicate them. You know, we still have a chance. And so a couple examples, giant hogweed and kudzu. Fairly common plants across the United States. And, you know, kudzu, I think a lot of people are very familiar with the invasiveness of that, especially like in the southeast United States. So if we got it here, you know, we would aim to get rid of it as quickly
uh-huh.
as possible. And giant hogweed is very, very toxic. It's like poison hemlock times 10.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize
that's not
that.
A scientific like fact.
No,
but it is, the sap can give you blisters that are will be susceptible to UV rays like for the rest of your life.
Oh, wow.
And you know, you could go blind. So, you know, we only have one known spot of that in Jefferson County and we're trying to get rid of it as best that we can.
Uh-huh. Is it on private property?
Yeah, which makes it a bit more difficult.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Yeah. So The second class is Class B. Class B are also required for control, but this is the class where each county has a bit of power over decision-making in Class B weeds because, so Scotch broom, it is a Class B weed, but every single county in Western Washington has had it undesignated, which makes it not required for control. And essentially here in Western Washington, Scotch broom, I mean, it was planted by WashDOT for erosion control I think the 70s or 80s. And
I didn't realize that.
You know, it's just, it's everywhere. And I would probably have to have a crew of about 100 people pulling Scotch broom year round for who knows how many years to eradicate it.
Don't those seeds stay viable in the soil for like 60 years afterwards? I mean, I've been really vigilant on the area where I saw Scotch broom on my property right by the road, the only place that I have enough sun for it to take a foothold. And every single year, I've got new little Scotch brooms. I mean, it's astounding. Yeah.
So we could put, you know, a 100-person crew for 5 years to work to control Scotch broom in Jefferson County. I mean, we're not gonna do that. That's not on the table. But we would have to then do that for 60 years, 100 years to be sure that we've gotten them all. You know, and every time one plant goes to seed, that timeline gets extended. So for us in Western Washington, you know, we do want to help people control it on their properties and in certain management sites. It's really important. But as a whole, it's just, it can't be prioritized. But in Eastern Washington, where they don't have a lot of Scotch broom, when they get it, they want to be able to control it and, you know, and utilize that kind of enforcement arm to make sure it doesn't get a foothold. And so the Class B, you know, it is a little bit more malleable. And the County Weed Board makes that decision every January.
And that's why it's so important that each county has their own.
Exactly.
Because the classes change a lot depending on the species.
Yeah, I mean, I think most people who live here are probably really familiar with how different the climate is in Sequim versus Shelton versus Seattle, let alone Eastern Washington, which is just a whole different climate. And so to have a state weed board list that encapsulates that whole state, you have to be able to appreciate the nuance of each place and change that, which is why the county weed boards are the ones that are actually doing the work and making the lists. But the state weed board does a lot of important work as well. So that's the Class B. And then Class C is recommended for control. Himalayan blackberry, for us, Scotch broom, bindweed, reed canary grass, holly is a recent addition to that list. And those weeds, again, when people want to manage them, being a noxious weed might provide them access to grant funding. But ultimately, I mean, Himalayan blackberry, you know, is like secretly taking over the whole of Western Washington. Again, it would just be hours and hours and millions of dollars probably to eradicate that. And that, I'm not even sure that we could. I'm not the expert on that. But, you know, I think Class C weeds, if you feel really passionate about eradicating something from your yard or your forest, we want to support you in that. But, you know, you just have to be vigilant to keep it out because we can't feasibly control Scotch broom on the roadsides.
So would you please describe the invasion curve depicted on your recent educational materials and why it's so important to detect weeds early on?
Well, I have it here for us to look at, so I'll describe it. On the XY axis, you have area infested and time. And in the bottom left corner, you know, the area infested is very, very small. And so it wouldn't take long. You know, if you find one holly plant in your yard to go pull it, that doesn't take very long. Yeah. But if you don't, like you said, you don't always notice that first holly plant and that one sets seed and suddenly you have maybe an acre that's like 5 or 10% infested, that is going to take a lot of time and money to eradicate from your property.
And, you know, with holly, the berries are spread. I mean, robins love the berries. I mean, a lot of fruit loving birds love holly berries, so they get spread. Once it goes to fruit, you're in big trouble.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, unfortunately, you know, weeds don't know what borders are, so they might bring a seed from town and bring it to your yard, and you know, you can't help that. But the longer you wait, often with like the class A weeds, we believe that prevention or eradication are possible. But the longer you wait, eradication becomes less and less feasible and more expensive. And so this is called the early invasion curve or early detection rapid response. And that's why education and outreach are so important. We really want to have eyes looking for these plants that we are really interested in finding and stopping from spreading. And so early detection rapid response, I have a picture here of a fallow soybean field. And you can see one kochia plant. It's a tumbleweed. Kochia is a tumbleweed. Not something we really have here, but it's very common in like Idaho and Montana. And you can see its path that it took to tumble through the soybean field.
That's crazy.
And now there's probably thousands of plants. Oh. So, you know, if that farmer had seen that one plant, and not placing blame on anyone, but if you see that one plant, you can stop it from spreading. And so I think the picture, sorry radio listeners, I think the picture carries a bit more weight.
Well, they can go on the website, they can go see for themselves.
And so early detection rapid response is really important. And another great example, this is just really interesting, there's a plant called Orobanchi cumana, or sunflower broomrape. And it is very common in the Middle East. And it is a parasitic plant that attaches to like tomatoes and sunflowers. And it has, I mean, the Middle East has been fighting it for decades. I mean, there are fields that have been fallow because of this plant for 50 years. Oh. And they replanted and the parasite was still in the ground. And someone posted on iNaturalist, which is a citizen science website, you know, this photo, a flower farmer in eastern Washington, she posted a photo of this, not knowing what it was, and it was found to be this Orobanchi cumana. And, you know, like WSDA got involved, this county weed board got involved, everyone, all the partners got involved, and, you know, it was a huge process to try to eradicate it. But hopefully that's the first known location of it in Washington, and hopefully that early detection rapid response is successful. But now we're all looking for it. So that one had an emergency class A listing because it this was the first North American location of it known. So, you know, like it would be pretty incredible if that was truly the first and it was found and eradicated. That would be a huge success story. And it still is a success story. But yeah, so finding things early. Yeah, it looks like asparagus when it first grows. Which is why she knew it was something weird in her sunflowers. And then the seeds are like just dust-like. So once they go to seed, it's impossible to contain it. But yeah, very beautiful plant.
So there's a lot of variability in how noxious weeds are controlled, right?
Yes. Yeah, I think the most important thing when you're going to control a weed is knowing what plant you have, first of all. That's like the most important thing.
Yeah.
I think people just pull things absentmindedly, which, you know, it's your yard, that's okay. But you really need to think about what you have. If the plant is like woody, like holly, you might not be able to just yank it out. You might need tools. If it spreads vegetatively, like knotweed or, well, knotweed's kind of the big one. Well, and like dandelions are a good example. People know if you leave any of the root in, that dandelion is going to spring right back up.
Yeah.
But with knotweed, if you leave even a rhizome the size of a grain of salt, it can create a whole new plant. So you can't just go hacking and pulling it. You have to be really diligent. And then the seed bank life, like what we talked about with scotch broom. You know, you pull scotch broom, you get it out of your yard, but next year it's going to come back. So what's your plan? And then in the seasons, you know, you should know when it's going to go to seed and what your time frame is. And being able to attack the plant at the best time of year is really in your best interest, even though life gets in the way sometimes. And like right now, our crew is running around pulling all the poison hemlock that's in flower and seed. It would have been a lot easier for us to do it before that happened, but you know, things happen. And
well, and you don't know, every season is different, you know, depending on what the rainfall is and what how hot it is, and all of a sudden you have a problem that you usually don't have to deal with until July.
Totally. Especially this year, things are flowering weeks earlier than I was expecting. And then the last real important consideration, is it an annual or a biennial or a perennial. Perennials are going to be a lot harder to get rid of than herb robert, which is like a just a little annual that's really easy to yank out of the ground. Uh-huh. And so, and then you have to consider your site. But the main types of, I know we're running out of time, but the main types of control are mechanical, cultural, biological, and chemical. And so just a brief overview. Mechanical is really like pulling weeds or cutting weeds, mowing. Cultural would be changing the environment that it's in. And so maybe shading something out or providing sun to the site so that the plant is no longer happy, changing the pH of the soil or making it more like bog-like, whatever. And then biological is the use of animals or like fungi or parasites that are geared towards that plant. And then chemical is the use of herbicides to kill a plant. So those are your four options.
Well, I see that we are running out of time for today, but in part two, we are going to get to pulling some of these out, and we will talk more. I know that the chemical control is very controversial, but sometimes you need to go that way in order to get rid of something that's damaging. So it's a good thing that we have part two of this program, and hopefully all of you can tune in next week. And thank you so much for joining us, Sophie, and sharing your expertise with us. And we'd also like to thank our friend Meg Amos for being our field recorder today. We'd also like to thank Nora Petrich for being our sound editor, along with all of you for listening. Remember that you can now listen to Nature Now as a podcast. Just go to your favorite podcast app and search for Nature Now KPTZ. And we are also on Instagram with the same tag. Wishing you, as always, happy trails.